Bobby Witt Jr. has an injury scare while spring breakout starts today. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Thursday, March 13th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. Tell him about how you wish you could see how he dances while that music plays in the background. I can see it. I have a little window down here. I can see him dance. I want to get to, we're continuing our NL East previews. We're going to spend a lot of time probably on the Philadelphia Phillies today. I want to get to the spring breakout kicking off today and some of these really exciting prospect matchups. But first, Bobby Witt Jr. We did the top 10 lineups in baseball yesterday. And Bobby, like the Royals were not in the top 10. They were not in the special mentions at the bottom where the guy talked about the others he considered in there. But if you were to take the Kansas City Royals and remove Bobby Witt Jr. off of that lineup, part of me feels like they probably drop not only into the bottom half of the league, but probably the bottom 10 as far as lineups in baseball, because so much is based on him being in there and being at all of the awesome, all of just his awesomeness. Top of the fifth inning yesterday, Mariners reliever Andre Munoz hit him in the forearm, on his left arm, with a 95.9 mile an hour pitch. Fell to the ground in pain, holding his arm. He went into the dugout. He was supposed to come out of the game in the next inning anyway. So he went to the dugout. He had x-rays that were negative. They said no fracture. It's officially a left forearm contusion. He did say he lost feeling in his fingers when it first happened. How terrifying would that have been had he suffered a serious injury?
Yeah, it's insane how good Bobby Witt Jr. is, really, on both sides of the ball. Everybody likes to talk about his offensive prowess, and while you were leading up to that question there, I kind of looked it up just to make sure I wasn't speaking out of turn, but he's on the defensive side of the ball. He's one of the best defensive shortstops in the league.
And, which is funny, because his first year, he was not good.
Right, yeah,
like, exactly. He really struggled in the transition from the minors, but he fixed it.
Yeah. Oh, and he fixed it, and he fixed it big time, because in 2024, I think he was, I just looked at it, but I don't remember exactly. He was over the top 95th percentile in outs above average, which is insane.
All of baseball, yeah.
Yeah. And just what he can do offensively. We saw what he did in 2024, contending for an MVP and being one of the best hitters on the planet. And it without him, their offense really just doesn't have that one guy. It would kind of be like a Cubs situation from last year, where they have a slew of guys that are kind of average to above average, but they don't have
even there. I would say that the Royals don't even have that. They're like the diet Cubs.
Yeah, right? No. Yeah, no. They wouldn't have as many as the Cubs did. No, not at all. Not for sure. It would be
the average at best guys, right?
It would just be the boys. It would
just be the boys.
It wouldn't be anyone and the boys. It would just be the boys. Maybe, I mean, you're at that, because at that point you're off.
Vinny P and Salvador Perez is what you're banking on there.
Exactly. And they're, while they're good, they're not that great superstar that Bobby Witt Jr. is.
Yeah. I mean, he had a 171 OPS plus. This is not us giving shade to Vinny P or Salvador Perez. Bobby Witt had a 171 OPS plus. He led baseball in batting average and hits. Like, come on. He was a runner up for MVP, Gold Glove, and Silver Slugger, which is just an absurd combination to get at the same time. That's like, you're the best at your position, both at hitting and at fielding. Like, that's dominance.
At shortstop.
At shortstop, yeah. The most important defensive position. It's funny. There was a tweet from Bobby Witt Jr. last night. No words, just a thumbs up and a prayer emoji. And then Vinny Pascantino quote tweeted that tweet and said, watched him tweet this while using his left hand, and has a picture of Bobby Witt on the towel. So he's going to be fine. This is just something where you hate to see things like, I know it's spring. Munoz has never been a control, like an impeccable control guy. but you just kind of hate to see like a potential injury to a superstar. You never want to see guys hurt, period, but especially not a superstar. So that's just terrifying. I'm very, very glad that they avoided serious injury there.
Yeah, 100%.
Spring breakout starts today. Second straight year they've done this. I really love how this works. There's 16 prospect games. It's prospects versus prospects for different organizations. There's two of them today. So Red Sox versus Rays, 7:05 p.m. Eastern. That's the only game from the Grapefruit League. And then Cubs at Dodgers at 9:05 Eastern. That's the only game from the Cactus League. Real quick, before we do anything else, of those two, which one of those sounds like it's more exciting to watch? Because those are four very good farm systems.
Yeah, I'm always big. I think I've made it very clear. I'm always big on the Rays and their development. So probably the Rays and Red Sox would be my choice, especially also not even just the Rays, but, you know, I'm assuming Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony are going to be in those games, and probably the second baseman whose name escapes me for the Red Sox prospects. I would say the Rays and Red Sox out of those two games.
Yeah. This is something where it's like, they've got that big three, right? They have Marcelo Meyer, they have Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell. That's the third one you're thinking of. And, this is going to be just really exciting here. All three of those guys should be in the lineup. The thing is, why I'm excited about this one, maybe more so than the Cubs and Dodgers one, is a lot of the Dodgers' top prospects are either pitchers or are lower-level guys like outfielder Zaire Hope. A lot of the Red Sox guys are probably going to debut this year. Like, no. These are probably major leaguers in 4 months. And so that's what makes that exciting. To your point, the Rays always have. Carson Williams is one of the best defensive shortstops I have seen. Like, he's probably just right below Andrelton Simmons for me on a dude that can just make any single play at shortstop. So that's going to be fun to watch. And then the rest of these, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, a lot of fun matchups. My Braves take on, they host the Tigers at 4:05 on Sunday. Your Phillies host the Pirates at 1:05 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. The format of a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of them, I think 9 of the 16, are doubleheaders after a major league spring training game that same day, okay? All 16 are getting broadcasts on MLB.tv or MLB.com or the MLB app. And some of them will be on MLB Network on standard television. I think they're still doing the 7-inning games. They're not doing the full 9. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Correction. I take that back. This year, one of the changes, it will be a full 9 innings. Your thoughts on the concept of the spring breakout games and how these work?
Yeah, I think it's a great concept. It's a good way to get more eyes on a lot of teams' top prospects, because not everybody goes to minor league baseball games. Not everybody has a minor league team near them. I used to have the Mobile Bay Bears years ago, and then they moved to Huntsville, and now they're the Huntsville Trash Pandas. And Rocket City Trash Pandas, yeah, but in Huntsville. I knew that sounded weird. My closest minor league team now is the Pensacola Blue Wahoos or the Biloxi Shuckers. And those are 45 minutes to an hour and a half away. And I'm not going to just go on a whim and go see those anytime soon. But, and especially if I wasn't doing this podcast or writing about baseball and the only team that I followed was the Phillies, none of the Phillies minor league teams are around me. So I would never see any of the Phillies prospects play unless they came to play the Pensacola Blue Wahoos or the Biloxi Shuckers, and I happen to go to a game. So it's a good way to get more eyes and get people more familiar with the prospects that are up and coming through their team system and get those guys on TV and get them more notoriety and have more people familiar with them as they come up through their professional career.
Yeah, this is one of those just like rare W's for Rob Manfred and the league. There's a couple cool things they do with these that I really like. All the games have a meet and greet autograph session ahead of first pitch. If it's a doubleheader, one ticket gets you into both. Nice. You don't have to buy a separate ticket if it's a doubleheader. Like, I think on Sunday, the Braves are on the road, spring training on the road. And so the whole, and so you'll need a ticket for the spring breakout home game. But for the most part, if it's a doubleheader, you get into both. They're all on the major league fields. None of these are on backfields. None of these are on minor league fields. They're all on major league fields. And then they're tweaking the rules a little bit. There's no three batter minimum for a pitcher. If a pitcher's taken out of a spring breakout game, he can enter the game. He can re-enter the game later. Kind of like in regular spring training, we see that sometimes. And then, like a two-way player could pitch an inning on the mound and then come back in as a position player. But if he plays as a position player, you can't re-enter as a position player. So if he plays as a position player and then leaves, he can only come back as a pitcher. But this just kind of helps them make sure they have enough pitchers. And then if you just want to manufacture a cool moment, like, hey, they have their top prospect coming to bat, we're going to stick in our top pitching prospect and let them duel it out, you can do that, which is kind of cool. So I'm a fan of this. I really do think this is awesome. I rare W for MLB, just rare W here. 70 of MLB Pipeline's top 100 prospects are on the rosters for these games. There's 900 prospects in the top 30s for MLB Pipeline, and apparently almost two-thirds of them are on a roster for spring breakout.
Wow.
Like, they really, it's not every rated prospect, but they've really done a good job of getting quality players in this whole thing. And some teams are going pretty hard. The Rays, Mariners, and Cardinals are going to have 9 of their top 10 on the roster. The White Sox, Royals, and Marlins will have all 10 of their top 10 prospects on the roster. Just think that's super awesome, kind of how that works. So really excited for these. Again, the first games are being aired tonight. Red Sox at Rays, 7:05 Eastern. Cubs at Dodgers, 9:05 Eastern. And then games on Friday start at 12:10 Eastern and run all the way. The last one starts at 8:10. Same thing Saturday, same thing Sunday. Going to be just tons of fun here. Awesome. Watch all your prospects. We cut the other MLB news a little bit short here so that we could kind of talk about the top two teams in this division. Today's going to be the Phillies. Tomorrow's going to be the Braves. We're not necessarily saying that's the order here, but we need to do a lot of talking about these two teams because these are the two big contenders in the East. The Mets will be up there, right? The Mets will be in the mix. If a lot of things go wrong for both of these teams, the Mets could swoop in and win the division. But this is really a two-team race. So for the Phillies, fun fact, Fangraphs, 95-67, 20% chance to win the division. It's the second, it's the second best odds to win the division. But full disclosure, I'm sorry, I get that backwards. That's the record they had last year. That displays the record they had last year, but they have a 20% chance to win the division. They have second best odds to win the division. This lineup, this is your team, okay?
Yeah.
Trey Turner, and the lineup on Fangraphs is probably wrong. Kyle Schwarber's going to lead off. But they've got Turner at short, Bryce Harper at first, Alec Bohm at third, Schwarber DHing, Nick Castellanos at and right, Max Kepler, like one of your favorite players, in left, JT Realmuto at catcher, Bryson Stott at second, and Brandon Marsh in center field. Apparently, they've also run Edmundo Sosa out in the outfield a little bit, too. So he's just like he's like Diet Tommy Edman. He's playing some center field. He's got shortstop. He can always do second or third and all of that. So defense is kind of specialist there. As a Phillies fan, what are your thoughts on this lineup?
I mean, there's a couple things to nitpick about it. It's a solid lineup. It is one of the it's hands down a top 10 lineup in baseball, if not a top five lineup in baseball. Yeah. And there, it's great. I mean, any lineup with Bryce Harper, and it's going to be a great lineup just because of what Bryce Harper has done throughout his career, specifically during his time with the Phillies. He has been so much better with the Phillies than he ever was with the Nationals, which is insane to think about because of how good he was with the Nationals. But yeah, I do agree. I don't think Trey Turner should lead off. I know we've now seen that twice through the FanGraphs projections and then that article we talked about yesterday.
I think that article got it from FanGraphs. That's got to be the explanation there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just Trey Turner is not a leadoff hitter, and he apparently, you know,
he doesn't want to run anymore. Is that the thing? He doesn't want to steal bases anymore. Did I say that?
I haven't seen that. It would not surprise me because of the injuries he's had over the past couple of years. And we saw it last year. He didn't run much last year. Last year was a down year in terms of running for him. But you know, we
23 attempts, which is that I believe that is a career low in a full season for him. Yeah, that's a career low for him in a full season is 23 attempts.
Yeah, and so he's picking his spots more and just choosing to run less. Which I mean, if it keeps him on the field, I mean, he's good at the back half of the lineup. He's not good in the top half of the lineup. I did a full article on it when we were with Athlon about Trey Turner and how the Phillies were so much better when Edmundo Sosa was in the lineup at short than when Trey Turner was in the lineup. And it's just the Max Kepler signing, I still don't understand, and I kind of looked deeper into his stats before we came on today, and I understand it even less now. His best season was in 2019 when they had the rabbit ball. That was the only time he's hit more than 30 home runs. He has played 150 or more games in a single season once because he is always injured. He is injured every season. He is good defensively. He is a solid defender, and that is where most of his productivity comes from, is on the defensive side of the ball.
So, yeah, let's put him in left field.
Yeah, which, yeah, exactly. He's never played left field. He's only played right and center field in the majors. And
move Castellanos.
Exactly. Castellanos is not a good defender. He is statistically
one of the worst in baseball. Yeah,
in baseball. Yeah,
it was Kyle Schwarber until they got Schwarber on him left. So now it's Castellanos.
Yeah,
ball go boom, baby. Ball go boom for good or for better or for worse.
It's a good lineup. There are definitely things that need to be addressed. Bryson Stott's looking fantastic in spring training. He was hurt for the majority of last season and playing hurt. So that's why he wasn't as good as many people expected him to be. And he's back to being 100%. He's walked more than twice as many times as he struck out this spring training so far, which of course it's spring training. It's a small sample size. He's not facing major league caliber pitching the entire time he's out there, but that's still a good sign for him going into the season. And I mean, the offense, there's a lot of things to be excited about for this season and for the Phillies. I don't know if they'll get back to 95 wins and having the second best record in Major League Baseball this year like they did in 2024, but it's going to be a good season. The offense is going to be a big part of that.
Would I be wrong in saying that the biggest risk of this lineup is the fact that you're banking on so many guys who are in their 30s, and in some cases like JT Realmuto, who's 34 and has a ton of mileage, you're banking on them not either succumbing to injury or slipping because of the mileage that they have? Like, would I be wrong in saying that's probably the biggest risk from a hitting perspective for this lineup?
No, there's certainly a concern with that because, you know, most of the lineup is in their 30s to mid 30s, and a lot of the big names are in their 30s to big 30s. I mean, we already
Schwarber, Castellanos, Kepler, Realmuto, Turner are all 31, 32, 33, 34. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we already saw, which JT Realmuto dealt with injuries last year and had that knee surgery in the middle of the year, and he still had a decent season, but it was not as good as you expect from JT Realmuto. Nick Castellanos had an awful season. We've already seen the regression from him. Trey Turner had a Trey Turner season. It's not great, but it's decent for the back, again, for the back half of the lineup. So really, with that being said, you know, you're kind of banking on Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber to not regress. And I don't expect Bryce Harper to regress. I mean, you could kind of see it from Kyle Schwarber. I could expect that more from Kyle Schwarber. He did change his approach at the plate last year. That's why he didn't hit 40 home runs. He only hit 36, I think it was.
38. But he also hit 248 instead of 190 or whatever he had hit in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. But he still has, despite the strikeouts, he does still walk.
Oh, I'm sorry. 197. He went from 197 to 248. But to your point, he led the National League in walks with 106. So he brought his batting average up 50 points and didn't walk as much as 20 as in 23, but also didn't strike out a league leading 200 plus times for the third consecutive season. He led baseball in 22 and 23.
Right. And if he can have that same approach again and kind of have the same production that he did in 2024, that's a great season from Kyle Schwarber. I don't think he'll lead the National League in walks again now that Juan Soto is back in the National League, but that was a great year. And then of course, Bryce Harper, objectively, this isn't bias. He's objectively one of the best hitters in baseball, and he showed it again last year that he is still one of the best hitters in baseball. And even if he does regress, he's still regressing to a top 10 hitter in baseball from a top 5 hitter in baseball. And he's playing at a position where he can be kept on the field a lot more and there's a lot less risk of injury. So as long as Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber can do what they're expected to do and you just get average seasons from the rest of the guys, even with regression, then Alec Bohm, Bryson Stott, and Brandon Marsh take a step forward in their development, then I think that the 30 plus year old regression can kind of be rendered moot with the rest of
at least
of
one
it.
More year.
Yeah.
Is there any concern? We're taking longer here because we have time. Is there any concern on your part that JT Realmuto and Schwarber, and I guess and Kepler technically, Ranger Suarez, are all free agents after this year while you're still stuck with $38 million combined for next season for Taijuan Walker and Nick Castellanos? Like, is this something where it feels like this needs to be maybe a bigger push than usual to win the whole thing because you may either have to go way out of pocket to bring back a Schwarber or somebody, or like this may be the band kind of partly breaking up after this?
Yeah, I think that at most the team could re-sign two of those four. Because it is definitely a concern because there's really at this point there's no viable option for catcher for backing up JT Realmuto at catcher. Every other catcher in the roster and in the organization, their ceiling is as a backup catcher, not as a full time.
The only starter caliber guy you had, Logan Ohapi. You traded him away 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was. Yeah, I traded him to the Angels.
The Angels for in the Brandon Marsh trade. Yep. The catcher is going to be something to watch for this year, especially if they wind up not bringing JT Realmuto back. I do think that Kyle Schwarber is going to be one of the guys they bring back just because of what he's done throughout his time with the Phillies. And of course, most players say they want to come back to the team that they're with, and Kyle Schwarber falls under that category. Whether that is true or not remains to be seen, but I do think he is one of the guys that they'll bring back. And I also think Ranger Suarez is a guy that I think he'll get an extension probably before the trade deadline just because of what he's done during his time with the team. And but other than that, I'm okay with Kepler leaving. And as long as they can find some kind of viable option to back up JT Realmuto in the future, then that'll be fine.
Yeah, here's the option the problem at catcher is the future free agents after this season, kind of ruling out guys who have player options, right? Realmuto, Salvador Perez is a club option. That's probably getting picked up. Yeah. Jose Trevino, Mitch Garver, Gary Sanchez, Danny Jansen might be a useful option. Tom Murphy, that's a club option. Austin Barnes, Jacob Stallings, Christian Bethencourt. It's really not like a super inspiring group. Christian Vasquez, Victor Caratini, Austin Hedges, Elias Diaz. I wouldn't say catcher's as hard to backfill as shortstop is. Shortstop is by far the hardest position to fill in baseball. But catcher's pretty close up there. And it's just there's not a lot of great options. So this is definitely a thing where you might have Trey Turner through 41, but you just don't have a catcher in it next year. Okay, moving from there to what I would argue is probably the strongest rotation in baseball, maybe outside of Seattle and maybe even with Seattle. Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Christopher Sanchez, Ranger Suarez, Jesus Luzardo. Again, Suarez is in a contract year. Luzardo's got 2 years of control when he was acquired from the Marlins via trade. Wheeler just signed a giant. He's making $42 million bucks each of the next 3 years. Nola is signed for this and five more years. So he signed, I think, through age 37. You have Taiwan Walker around still, but like outside of that, this rotation, three lefties, one, which is not a thing you see a ton of now.
Yeah.
This feels like it's good enough where this could carry this team to a World Series if they're healthy, provided the offense just does enough. Do you guys, I guess, internally worry about like depth or anything when you think about like, hey, you're going to get Andrew Painter at some point in time this year, who had Tommy John and is only 21 years old. He's going to debut and all that. But like outside of that, it's like him and Taiwan Walker and then a bunch of guys who got to see if they can figure it out, like a Mick Abel or a Griff McGarry or a Michael Mercado. Do you worry about the options behind these guys, or have these guys shown to be durable enough where you're like, yeah, we're good?
For the most part, they've been durable enough. I mean, you look at Aaron Nola, and since 2018, he's pitched more innings than any other pitcher in the sport. And he's one of the most underrated pitchers in the sport, strictly because of his durability and what he's able to do on the mound. And Zach Wheeler has – go ahead.
I was going to say, to your point, of that top three, the guy who had the least innings was Christopher Sanchez at 181 and two-thirds. He had the least because Nola had 199. Wheeler had 200. Do you think Wheeler holds that over Nola's head in the clubhouse?
Oh, 100%. I got two
more outs than you in the course of a season. Come on.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's I mean, it's iron sharpening iron, realistically. The team, when the top four guys are on, they're all aces. They're all ace caliber pitchers and able to fill in as an ace on any team within Major League Baseball. And then you have Jesus Luzardo, whose ceiling is
very good in spring.
Yeah. And his ceiling is a number two pitcher and he's your number five pitcher. I mean, it's definitely a strength, but you hit the nail on the head. Outside of Andrew Painter, there's no depth, but this is what you see with a Dave Dombrowski led front office.
Stars and scrubs.
You have no depth, you have no farm system, and you either win the World Series or you die trying. And it's
or you get knocked out in the first round. You're gonna make the playoffs, you knock out the first round or you win the World Series, no middle ground.
Yeah, and the depth is certainly an issue, but it's more of a future Phillies issue. It's not a right now issue.
That's a problem for next year's Dave Dombrowski to figure out. Another area where I don't love the depth, maybe, is the bullpen, right? You brought in Jordan Romano from Toronto to be the closer. That feels kind of like a questionable move. He didn't pitch a lot last year, like 13 innings, but he was negative war. He was not that good last year. You know, eight saves, ERA of 6.59 in that limited time last year. I've always loved Ryan Kerkerine. He's been a workhorse. He pitched 63 innings last year. A lot of these dudes can put up numbers. Joe Ross, free agent, 77 innings. Tanner Banks, 72 innings. Jose Alvarado, 61 innings. Jose Ruiz, 51 innings. But for a contending team, it feels like Philly's never really been able to figure out the back end of their bullpen like Atlanta has, like New York has, like Milwaukee has, right? And is this bullpen going to be a weakness? One, and two, are you going to have to trade away promising prospects in the season to go grab a closer at the deadline because the bullpen's been so much of a weakness?
Yeah, I do expect a good bounce back from Jordan Romano this year. He had an elbow impingement last year in his right elbow, which was why he didn't pitch as much, and he really pitched through it for a little bit of the season when he did pitch, is supposedly why he had the issues that he had on the mound. So I expect a little bit of a bounce back, and then Matt Strom is also injured right now, and he's another guy at the back end of the bullpen. But you're right, there is no bullpen depth. It has been a struggle in Philadelphia to kind of find that, and they had it last year for most of the year when they had Jeff Hoffman or Ryan Kerkerine and Matt Strom at the back of the bullpen. And then for whatever reason, they decided to blow things up and bring in Carlos Estevez. But, you know, it is what it is. But it's been an issue outside of Matt Strom and Ryan Kerkerine. And then if Jordan Romano can bounce back to Jordan Romano form from before 2024, there's no other real viable option. You really need your starters to go seven innings. And last year, that was something that they led baseball in, was their starting pitchers pitching seven or more innings. And when they did that, they won most of the games that they did that in. Yeah. But you really can't count on your guys to do that. It's going to put a lot of workload on them. And you kind of saw the starters struggle in the postseason because of it. And Ranger Suarez dealt with some back issues during the season. Christopher Sanchez down the second half of the season, he started to wear down and show signs of fatigue. And so you really need to find something. And I do expect them to make a trade at some point. And it's probably going to mean losing out on Justin Crawford and maybe some other prospect, but as long as they keep Aiden Miller and Andrew Painter, then the future's kind of bright, a little glimmer there.
Yeah, it's just, it's a tough place to be, right? It's just one of those, you've got to figure out, you know, there's you can't spend your money everywhere unless I guess you're the Mets. Other than that, you have to pick somewhere to not spend money, and the bullpen's kind of been the place where they haven't really either developed or paid guys. So we'll see what happens. I mean, Matt Strom has a decent contract, right? He has a vesting option. We'll see if that vests. He has to pitch 60 innings this year for that option to go from a club option to vesting next year. But either way, are we thinking second place? Or are we thinking that, like, or is this just, it's neck and neck and we really can't make a prediction until we get into the season and see how things play out?
I do think it's pretty neck and neck. I think it's going to be very close, but I do think that with the Braves on paper having Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuña Jr. back this year, even though they both won't be back for the whole year, they will be back this year. I think that
Pretty early, I think.
And I think that the Braves will wind up taking the division this year.
I agree. So there we go. I also am a believer in my Braves, and we'll talk about the Braves tomorrow, obviously at depth or at length and in depth. This has been First Pitch for Thursday, March 13th. You'll see it on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.